Patriots coach Bill Belichick joins us. Good afternoon, Coach. How are you?
Good.
Rejuvenated after a little weekend?
Oh, sure, yeah.
I always wonder, on a Sunday like that, do you watch football like we do? Or after 40 years of all 22s, can you not watch a game on regular TV?
No, I could definitely watch it. But, yeah, no, we were in here yesterday working on the Bears and kind of keeping an eye on the Miami game, but just going through our scouting report and stuff that we already had on them. So, it was another interesting day in the NFL.
Yeah, very interesting. And last time you were here, you know, Steve DiAzzi mentioned, you know, getting ready for that Thursday game and just how it could be information overload and how do you approach it with your players now that the game has been played, that Jets game, not a lot of time to prep for it. What were a couple of things that you told them to kind of cut out all of the unnecessary information and just get them to a central theme or a central point?
I think part of it is just, you know, looking at what they did, the last couple weeks, because, again, we know ourselves that playing a Thursday game, you can't invent a whole lot of new stuff in that amount of time. So you have to have some carryover from something that you've done in the last, 2 to 3 weeks. So that's probably the place to start is, you know, let's focus on what they've done most recently and figure that some of that's gonna carry over. But, you know, certainly they gave us a couple things that were different, part of the script and that type of thing. You know, the two quarterbacks in the game did that a couple times, you know, stuff like that. So we expected some type of new look, new formation, new personnel group, because that's kind of what they do. They always throw a couple of those in there.
And then from your perspective, look, if you know that there's not a lot of time to prepare for it defensively, well, they have to install something new too, so you would probably think, all right, well, they're in the same boat that we're in. They
right.
Can't really go overboard and throw in a lot of wrinkles because they may not be able to execute it.
Right. I think you have to just count on your fundamentals and your basics and the rules that you have to handle certain things, just getting you through whatever it is that might come up that you haven't been able to cover.
I thought Danny Amendola did a real good job for you as a returner, looking at his kick returns early on. What was involved in your decision-making process to put him back there?
Well, Danny's done a good job for us all year. But I would say, you know, just the workload that Patrick had, taking over for Nate Ebner on the punt team, you know, as the personal protector, playing on punt return to handle some vice and potential two deep situations there, plus his role on defense has really kind of expanded over the last couple of weeks as well. So he's in there on maybe not every snap, but on a lot of them. I just felt like that would be one less thing, one thing we could spread Danny and Danny's been doing a good job with it. So I thought it worked out well too.
I saw on Patriots.com the post game footage, and I saw you give Danny a big hug in the dressing room and congratulate him on the game. On what proved to be the game-winning touchdown, how much ad-lib was there in his route based on what Tom saw, what Danny saw, how much of it was drawn up, and how much of it was see what you see and react to it?
That's a good part of that. Red area scramble, that's always a big big part of the game down there in that area of the field. Whether you're on offense or defense, it's just a condensed area. There's less space to work with, and the coverage is tighter, and so when you look and don't see somebody open, then the play extends a little bit, and you have to defend it longer, and you have an opportunity offensively to scramble around and maybe create some space somewhere and get the ball to them. So that's something we've worked on from day one, and it definitely came up in the game. Thought Danny did a good job. Tom read it, made a good throw, and Danny made a real good catch, you know, behind him. So. But we work on that all the time.
You know, on the final play of the game, you know, 58-yard field goal attempt. Is there anything to be said, or is it just obvious? Hey, it's going to be a low kick. Put your hands up. Try to block it. I mean, is there anything else that you were thinking about and trying to communicate to the team in that moment?
Yeah, it was pretty much the same situation we had last year in the Cleveland game, which was, I think that was 57, 58, whatever it was. Same type of thing. So, yeah, I mean, of course, make sure that we're, you know, the usual reminders. I mean, make sure you're not offside, make sure you don't rough the kicker, and get your hands up, And we always talk about getting our hands up, because no matter how much penetration you get without your hands up, you're not going to be able to block the kick. So it is a tough kick, you know, 58-yarder. If you get it up in the air too much, then you're not going to make it. So you got to have a little bit of a, you know, a drive, a trajectory to it that'll carry. And, you know, Chris did a good job of penetrating and get his hand, get the timing up, and he was in the right spot at the right time. It's a big play.
Much was made in the aftermath, and Dean Blandino shot it down pretty quickly, about the presumptive officiating. The umpire basically tapping your guy on the side and saying, hey, you can't line up right here. That happens all the time, doesn't it? That sort of thing. It's a pretty normal course of events in the NFL.
It is, but even on that play, Hightower wasn't going to line up there. He was just making a call. He was going to step in and step out. He wasn't going to line up there, so it really was not, you know, that wasn't part of the play. Where he ended up is where he would have been. That's where he would have been.
Yeah, the whole line shifted, basically, as he made the call, right?
Right.
So much ado about nothing in New York.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, that his alignment wasn't on the line of scrimmage. He wasn't going to move up there to line up there. He just made the call and then stepped back, and that's what he did.
Now, you said off the top, interesting day in the NFL. It was a record-setting day for Peyton Manning. Just wondering, for a guy who has competed against Peyton Manning, you know, game plan for him. Obviously, number one overall pick, so you know, greatness was projected for him from somebody. But is there any point, maybe it was his first year, his fifth year, where you just said, not that he's going to throw 500 touchdown passes, over 500 in his career, but this guy has it. When did you know that there was something special about Peyton Manning?
I don't know. I don't have a like, particular date or anything, but it didn't take too long. It didn't take long. And, you know, we played against him, you know, in the division. So you saw it right away. You know, not only our games, but watching him on film and studying him and all that. So, you know, he'd probably still be looking for those touchdown passes and that record if it wasn't for playing against me.
I saw the stat last night. He's thrown more touchdown passes against Bill Belichick coach teams than any other coach in the NFL, because he played you guys so often early on.
Great. That's comforting to know.
33 of the 511 or whatever it was.
Yeah. So yeah.
Not a number you had tattooed on your arm or something to remember, huh?
Well, I asked Teddy Bruschi earlier, you know, if you could put it in perspective, what it's like to game plan for or prepare for a Peyton Manning versus, you know, quarterback B, you know, an above average to good quarterback to a Hall of Famer like Peyton Manning. What are some of the things that just stand out in terms of, all right, you know, maybe this guy will fall for that, but you got to bring something different against Peyton Manning?
Yeah, I think it's all the little things, all the things that you would normally talk about, disguise, technique, leverage on the receiver based on the coverage you're in, playing the ball, you know, and there's no plays off with him. Nobody's off the hook. Doesn't matter what the down and distance is, where the guy lines up, what the play you think it might be. Everybody's at the point of attack. So he's got great field vision and doesn't need much room to get the ball in.
And Teddy, you remember, Teddy was telling the story about, hey, he heard a word, he heard Raider. And he said, I know, okay, I heard that one time. Next time I hear that, I'm going to jump that route. And then he just tweaked the play, and it was something different. Did you coach your guys not to listen to what he has to say? Because, you know, there's so many directions and so many words at the line of scrimmage. A lot of it, I'm sure, is just meant to confuse you. What's the approach when you
yeah, well, and I think he does a great job of that. I think we saw that last year in the San Diego playoff game the week before we played him. Where the Chargers were offside, I want to say five times. It was a lot, whatever it was. And, you know, there's a team that they play twice a year in the division and knows them well and all that, but they took that bye week and changed up the snap count and got them on it repeatedly in critical situations. So, you know, when you see things like that, you know that they're doing good self-scouting and they're staying on, and especially, you know, the quarterback and the cadence. But whether it be the cadence or a play call or a term or whatever, yeah, they do a very good job of that.
Speaking of self-scouting, the cliche in the National Football League is that the bye week is when teams really go into self-scouting and what are we doing well, what are we not doing well, what do we need to improve on. with this almost mini bye week that you had with the weekend off, was there some of that going on this weekend as well?
Well, we do it every weekend, or every week. So after each game, we go back and look at our tendencies and try to, well, we can't wait till the middle of the season to do it. We, you know, we got to deal with it every week because that's what they're looking at. So we want to see what they're seeing, and you know, maybe you're okay with it, maybe you're not, but at least we know what we're putting out there. We know the plays we've run. They've got them. We got them. So we can see what we've done.
Are you ever surprised by what you see? Does it look different than what you remember standing on the sideline?
Sometimes it does, sure. Yeah. Particularly, you know, when you look at a certain play or a certain breakdown, whether it's down and distance or how you did against a particular front or particular coverage or that type of thing. There's so many plays out there, and you run a lot of plays in practice that sometimes it runs together a little bit, you know, because what you know you've done and what you've actually shown on film and games is two different things. You know, they only know what they've seen. So, you know what you've practiced, you know what you've had in on game plans, but, you know, this is what we've actually run. You know, so it's, I think there's certainly a, you know, it's an important part of it. And but every team that's good has tendencies. I mean, every good football team, every good basketball team, every good baseball team, they have certain characteristics that make that team good, and those are tendencies, and that's a good thing to have. But at the same time, you don't want to make it to the point where the other team knows exactly what you're doing, and then, you know, you're playing right into their strength. So, but no, we do that every week. We can't wait till the middle of the season to do it. Could we take a longer look at it then? Possibly, but we do it every week.
You know, it seems like an interesting exercise, Bill, because as creatures of habit, we all have tendencies, especially when you're comfortable doing something, you tend to do it and tend to repeat it. How do you change tendencies? I mean, if you're a good team, you're doing one thing over and over, but you don't want it to be predictable. How do you go out and say, okay, we're going to change our tendencies now? How's that work?
And again, I think that's the question is, when you look at your tendencies, you might look at them and say, I like these tendencies. I like where we're at. I like the amount of times that we do this or the amount of times that we do that or the amount of times that we've thrown the ball to this guy or that guy. I mean, you don't want to, you know, come out of the game and say, well, we never threw the ball to, you know, let's break the tendency. We've never thrown the ball to, we're not going to throw the ball to Rob Gronkowski. I mean, that, you know, that's not really a tendency you want to break. I'm sure that's one that your opponents would like to see you break. But so, you know, I think it depends on what it is and what your alternatives are. Sometimes you have tendencies, but you decide, look, we need to stay with them because it's the best we got. And, they know that there's a good chance that's what it is, but we're having success with it, and it's the best that we can do, so we'll stick with it. Other times you come in and say, boy, this is the perfect time to change this up. Here's what they've been looking at. We don't really want to do that much this way anyway. This week, let's do something else, and that's what our game plan is, and it plays away from our tendency. So just, you know, it could go either way on that.
This week's drive, we already talked about it briefly, the touchdown that resulted in a you know, 27-19 lead for you guys. Mm-hmm. Great improvising by Danny Amendola. You know, what did you think was the key to that drive? It may have been that touchdown, or was there something else there that really stood out to you?
Yeah, well, no, it was huge because I think that there hasn't. That's the only play like that in the league this year. 3rd and 19 for a touchdown. So, you know, usually 3rd down in the red area are the toughest plays to pick up, and if you can convert those, then you have a good chance of scoring a touchdown. So there's really not many bigger plays in a game than 3rd down in the red area. 3rd down's big, red area's big. 3rd down in the red area is huge. So to be able to convert that and get a touchdown out of it was, I'd say it was probably the biggest play of the game.
We appreciate the time as always. Thanks for being with us. We'll talk to you after Chicago next week.
All right, sounds good.